The Leach Report Radio Network is on the air with the voice of the Wildcats, Tom Leach. This is where the Big Blue Nation comes for the latest news and views on the Cats. Interact with the show now by tweeting at Leach Report or email leachreport@gmail.com. Call us at 877-904-1080. Now, the voice of your Wildcats, Tom Leach.
Coming to you from the Clark's Pump and Shop studio, Dick Gabriel in for the voice. As you well know, the Wildcats and the traveling party returned early this morning, well after the snow had begun to fall. So happy to sit in for Tom with your opportunity to chat with us and also to listen to an impressive lineup of guests, as Tom always has for us. Sean Venzel of HoopsInsight.com will join us, as will Justin Rowland of Cats Illustrated and Anna Tarullo of the UK TV Network. And, of course, front and center will be Kentucky's win over the A&M Aggies down in College Station. Wildcat News of the Day presented by Giuseppe's. Check out their new climate-controlled patio and the drive-through window for orders to go. Largest crowd in Reed Arena history, 14,036. It was, yes, a whiteout. And if you heard Calipari's comments on TV and from the post-game interview Zoom, he poked fun again, as he has many times, at the fact that everywhere Kentucky goes, there's generally a giveaway. Not that you need a reason to get people hyped for the Wildcats coming to town, but it makes things a lot easier, doesn't it, when the most hated rival in the SEC shows up. So everybody wearing a white T-shirt last night, but they saw A&M blow an early 13-point lead, way too early, of course. But A&M had a lead with 9 minutes to go and still let the Wildcats come back, even though Kentucky played poorly when you look at the stats, but in some ways played really well. I know it sounds odd to hear that, but think about what they went through when you've got Ty Washington on the bench much of the first half with two fouls. And by the way, Calipari put him back in. We'll talk about that. And yet Kentucky still wins the game, despite the fact that it was the poorest shooting day or night of the season, and we're past the halfway point at this point. And A&M did a lot of good things. There's no question about it. But still, Kentucky wins its fourth straight, eighth in the last nine games, 15-3 now on the year, 5-1 in the SEC. It snapped an eight-game winning streak for A&M, and it was the first league loss for the Aggies, who are not probably not as bad as people thought they might be, but they were predicted to be down at the bottom or near the bottom of the league this year in the preseason. But that's because they had so many new faces and people weren't entirely certain of how this team was going to respond to Buzz Williams. Now, here's the question. Will A&M go out and play its next game with the same kind of defensive intensity it showed against the Wildcats, with the double teaming, the pressure defense? At times they had, again, a lot of teams have done this, or at least tried. They have surrounded Oscar Tshiebwe, have surrounded him, triple-teamed him to keep him off the boards. So, you know, they're going to see the same kind of thing coming up Saturday down at Auburn, which, by the way, will be the third game of this five-game stretch where you have the Wildcats are playing teams with a combined record of 64-13 when that stretch began on January 15th. So, like we have said all along, just a brutal stretch of games for the Wildcats. But the Cats take on Auburn Saturday, televised by CBS, WKYT, and you will hear that game right here on the UK Radio Network. By the way, UK with a season high tying 17 turnovers, eight of those by Sevier Wheeler. John Calipari tried to take some of the heat himself and said he had put Wheeler in some bad spots with how they were trying to play pick and roll. But I think anybody who saw that game or listened to Tom Leach and Mike Pratt, Mike repeatedly talked about not getting pinned against the sideline or against the midcourt stripe and not giving up your dribble. And Wheeler did not play well. Wheeler, looked like he had never been trapped before when A&M would play run and jump on it. But his teammates didn't help him either. They didn't respond very well. So in the brief period Kentucky has to work on such things, you know the Wildcats will work on that because they will see more of the same from the Auburn Tigers. Links to these stories are on the Bud Light Leach Report page at TomLeach.com. UKY.com. One other note for you, UK women back in action tonight. They take on the Florida Gators. Kentucky back home at Memorial Coliseum. The Wildcats have lost two straight. Florida on a three-game winning streak. Tyra Elzey's team needs a win. More Kentucky basketball chatter when we come back. Served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington. It is the Leach Report.
You're tuned to Talk Radio 1080 and The Leach Report. And visit TomLeachKY.com for more news and views on the Cats.
Dick Gabriel sitting in for the voice of the Wildcats, and we welcome in Sean Vincel at Hoops Insight on Twitter. He has an interesting Twitter feed where he breaks things down statistically. And welcome. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning. Doing very well today.
What was your takeaway, and I know you had a lot of them based on your Twitter feed last night, but there was a lot to unpack, as you kids like to say, when you look at the numbers of Kentucky. It's kind of amazing. Kentucky won based on the stats we see from that game, isn't it?
Yeah, it's pretty staggering. There was a lot that was not only really bad for Kentucky, but also really unusual. I mean, little things like, I mean, you saw a lot of missed alley-oop connections, missed dunks. Kentucky leads the nation in field goal percentage at the rim at like 76%. Last night they hit half their shots at the rim. I mean, that's just not something Kentucky does. And they got to the rim a whole lot. I mean, this was one of their better games of getting there, and they just blew some chances. They also, you know, missed a lot of open threes. These weren't, you know, a lot of Kellen Grady's misses, for example, weren't even really contested. And I mean, I don't think a lot of that is due to Texas A&M defense, because Texas A&M isn't really known as like a, they're more of a forced turnovers team, and they did that to a pretty high extent, but contesting shots really isn't their thing. So I think it was just kind of a, you know, an off game last night with some of these odd things that happened. And it's really impressive that Kentucky could still gut out a 6-point win on the road against a, you know, pretty solid team and then you know, move on, be able to face Auburn this weekend.
I counted at least three missed dunks, and, you know, either contested or bouncing off the back of the rim. So you've got to think, how might the game, such a close game, have been changed if those go down? And I thought you made a great point when you said UK needs to work on late-game offense. I think everybody has seen that, where they end up settling for a 17-footer off the dribble. That can't be right.
Yeah, it's really interesting, because Kentucky's actually done a really good job this year of moving some of those, you know, long dribble jumpers out of the offense. Most of Kentucky's mid-range shots tend to be catch and shoot or getting kind of inside of 15 feet. A couple players, Ty Washington and Keon Brooks, have actually put up amazing numbers this year. I looked it up, and I couldn't find another team actually that was better on those shots kind of from, you know, 5 feet to 15 feet than Kentucky this year, mostly because of Washington Brooks. And but last night towards the end of the game, you saw, you know, a severe Wheeler kind of weird runner from the free throw line, Ty Washington, you know, pull up jumper. Those are shots that, I mean, they'll go in maybe 35% of the time, and it's perfectly fine if, you know, once in a while you get to the last couple seconds of the shot clock and that's all you can get. But, you know, with late game execution, if you're taking those kind of shots, you're inviting the other team to have a lot of opportunities where they can, you know, capitalize and they can get better shots. So Kentucky, the last, I think, 4 minutes of the game last night was 1 of 7 from the field.
Oh,
and
man.
Four of those were kind of mid-range jumpers. I mean, you're not going to close out a lot of really good teams. They got, you know, Kentucky got really lucky that A&M only shot 1 of 7, and then Kentucky got to the free throw line, obviously, the last minute. But, they definitely have to tighten that up a little bit.
Not only that, but the league's best three-point shooting team, A&M, goes 1 for 22 on the night. And so a lot of that was Kentucky defense, and some of that was just flat-out missing, including shots down the stretch, Sean, where I think the Big Blue Nation was holding its collective breath, but the shots didn't fall, and Kentucky got the rebound.
Absolutely. I mean, yeah, there's no college basketball team in the country that's bad enough to go 1 for 22 on any kind of consistent basis. So, yeah, Kentucky got really lucky that Texas A&M had one of the worst shooting nights you can imagine, and that helped Kentucky escape. But, yeah, I think there's a lot to look at from the film. I think you're exactly right. Down the stretch, there were some open threes by Texas A&M guys in situations where I mean, that they would have been a huge momentum changer for a home team and a home crowd that was pretty rabid and just looking for something to cling on to. So I think Kentucky game definitely gets sharper. I mean, this weekend, obviously, the Auburn game is going to get their attention. So yeah. I'd expect a pretty big bounce back there.
You mentioned Sevier Wheeler. He had one of his worst games as a Wildcat. And Calipari tried to take some of that blame, as I mentioned earlier. But Wheeler, I mean, basketball 101, letting himself get trapped against the sideline, picking up his dribble. What did you make of all that?
Yeah, it was odd. I read something yesterday that I actually had forgotten about this. Wheeler was actually committed to Texas A&M in high school and then decommitted when they fired Billy Kennedy before hiring Buzz Williams. And it made me wonder if there's some sort of, yeah, if he kind of was pressing, wanting to do too much, not only the turnovers, but first of all, he took a lot of shots yesterday. Now some of that was he got to the rim and got creative stuff. But there were even opportunities like on the fast break where normally you'd think he would pass to a teammate, and it seemed like he was kind of trying to drive into the contact and really make a statement. I wonder if there was a little bit of a mental thing going on where he wanted to make a statement and was pressing to do a little too much, which, you know, it can happen, but, you know, Wheeler's had some up-and-down games this year, but overall he's been a tremendous addition, and that many turnovers last night is just absolutely out of character for him. I wouldn't worry about that too much because, honestly, Kentucky's played a lot of teams this year that are good at forcing turnovers, and they haven't had problems much like they did last night. So I think that, and it was really just Wheeler. I mean, the rest of the team did a really nice job, so if he can just get the right frame of mind back and protect the ball like he's been doing this year, I think Kentucky's going to be just fine. But it was very odd to see, I'll say that.
Sean, if you could hang on, I got a few more questions for you. There's a lot to, like I said, unpack here in a little bit of time. So if you'd hang on, we'll be right back with you. We're talking with Sean Wentzel of HoopsInsight.com on the Leach Report, served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington.
Look for the Leach Report on Facebook. Show updates, contests, and other cool stuff. Check it out today.
Welcome back. Dick Gabriel in for the voice of the Wildcats, coming to you from Clark's Pumpkin Shop Studio. And we are talking with Sean Wentzel of Hoop Insight, the Hoops, plural, insight.com. And we're breaking down last night's win over Texas A&M on the road. A tough place to play regardless. But Kentucky comes out of there. And, Sean, we talked about Sevier Wheeler and a lot of things prior to the break. But I'm wondering what you thought about the substitution pattern. Which, and I hate that phrase because it sounds like a coach ought to be locked in to how he subs. And oftentimes in the NBA, coaches are, but not in college ball. John Calipari came with Collins early, and at one point late in the game comes with Ware, who played well, Toppin, kind of hot and cold last night. What did you see?
Yeah, it was interesting. I was definitely surprised to see Damian Collins so early, just because he really hasn't gotten any significant time out of garbage time lately. And, you know, it could have, I mean, I'm not sure if that was maybe trying to reward Collins for some good playing practice or something like that. But, you know, it is interesting. You mentioned that in the NBA, there tends to be kind of set rotation patterns, so players know what to expect. In college, you really don't have that luxury because coaches are learning their team, especially, you know, a Calipari team where there's so many newcomers every year. You just don't have that time. You're working on things. But it was an interesting little bit of departure there. And on the road, that's a little strange. I always think of it in terms of, you know, is the coach able to communicate, you know, to the players ahead of time what their roles are and expectations, and then in-game, is he able to kind of stick to that? And I'll say this, there's nothing I've ever seen from Calipari that says he doesn't do that. I think players understand their roles very well, but it was a little bit odd. I mean, Lance Ware, you know, last year Lance Ware was not very good in his first year at Kentucky. That happens a lot. This year he hasn't put up great stats, but in the past couple months, he's been, maybe, you know, past month, month and a half, he's actually quietly been a really nice piece for Kentucky, and I actually think he's legitimately added to, they have kind of a core seven-man rotation, you know, with Toppin and Mintz off the bench, but Ware has been able to hold the rope very well, you know, to kind of borrow a saying maybe from football a little bit more. Kentucky isn't getting outscored anymore in the minutes where Shibuye sits. Ware is rebounding at a very high level. He's not taking many shots, but he's hitting the ones he does. He's doing a solid job on defense, not letting opponents score at the rim very much. I don't see a lot of reason to go away from Lance Ware as the main backup for Shibuye right now. I mean, I think Kentucky's got a really solid eight-man rotation, And the interesting thing is mixing and matching them. It seems like Calipari's done a really good job of communicating what the what everyone's roles are, and then having them do that. I mean, the shooters are the guys taking the outside shots. You know, Oscar's rebounding and getting the ball in the low post, and Wheeler and Washington are making the plays, and the machine's kind of humming. So, yeah, last night seeing some departure from that are a little bit interesting, but overall not worried about it too much. I think, though, yeah, if you start seeing weird things again and the rotation expands at Auburn, I would wonder why, because I think this is the time to kind of tighten that rotation to probably, 7-8 guys as opposed to expanding it.
It speaks well to the depth, though, doesn't it, that Calipari can kind of pick and choose. You know, he goes with Bryce Hopkins for about a minute and a half. He brings some energy. You mentioned Collins. He brought a little bit of enthusiasm early, a couple of fouls, but made a steal. Ware, by the way, with a block and a bucket. So it's kind of mix and match right now for him. That's a little bit of a luxury, I think.
Absolutely. I mean, the very best teams in college basketball right now are getting to the point where they – can actually go 7-8 deep without a lot of fall off, and then maybe they have a break glass in case of emergency plan with a couple guys late on the bench, but they're not really shuffling the rotations and trying to figure out their team. That's one of the things that's interesting to me as I look at Auburn's dad, is like Auburn goes deep and they don't have a fall off, whereas sometimes you see teams where, like Kentucky was early in the season, where when Oscar sat on the bench, they really struggled to outscore teams. And you just can't have that as you go through the season. You've got to define your roles. You've got to be able to kind of go out there and consistently be able to outscore teams for almost the entire game, or otherwise you've got real weaknesses. And I'm really, really excited to see Kentucky getting to the point where they now have that type of rotation. And I think it makes for a really interesting game this Saturday, because it's two teams that both can go 8 deep with guys who can play and guys who can execute what they want, and there's not going to be a slip-up.
No, I've got less than a minute left. I apologize for that. But real quickly, Jacob Toppin, 9.6 boards, a couple of assists, but still a little soft defensively in the middle, isn't he?
Yeah, I don't, with his leaping ability, you'd think he'd be able to contest shots a little bit more, especially off the ball. He's definitely grown, though, into some really nice roles. I'm very impressed with him on the defensive glass. He's very confident, clears the defensive glass really well, and he's really doing a good job of kind of taking the shots that he knows how to take and not creating problems in the offense with his lack of outside shooting. That really hasn't been a problem the last 9 games. So Toppin, I think this year during the season, has improved maybe more than any Wildcat at all.
I like it when he's on the floor, because I just think in terms of raw athleticism, he is so much fun to watch. He's not the only guy like that, but he has such great upside that I think he's just a real treat sometimes. Sean, thank you so much for your time, and we'll be looking for you on Twitter at Hoops Insight. Sean Vincel is his name. Appreciate your time. Have a great morning.
Thank you. You too.
That's Sean Vincel, and again, kind of breaking things down statistically for us. Anna Tarullo of the UK TV Network is coming up next. We'll talk basketball and football with her here on the Leach Report, brought to you by Wild Eggs of Lexington.
This is where the Big Blue Nation gathers. It's Talk Radio 1080 and the Leach Report, followed by Kentucky Sports Radio.
You from the Clark's Pump and Shop studio, which looks suspiciously like my garage this morning. Dick Gabriel sitting in for Tom Leach, the voice of the Wildcats. Got back technically just a few hours ago from the road trip to Texas A&M, so we're glad to sit in for him. And bringing a lot of energy at this early hour is our next guest from the UK TV Network, BBN Tonight. Anna Tarullo is with us. How are you, young lady?
Well, good morning, Mr. Gabriel. I'm great on this Victory Thursday after that win last night.
Yeah, it was in doubt for a little while. Or let me ask you, did you ever have any doubt, because things were not going well early?
Oh, my gosh, for sure. Completely, especially with the past couple of years of what UK basketball has done to our hopes and dreams. Definitely, them getting that slow start, especially in that environment, was extremely concerning. And have that trap that A&M was running. I mean, to run in it so many times, not be able to do anything about it. But with this team, they're such a team of runs. And I think they've learned down the stretch, losing those close games, that I still had that sliver of hope. I still kind of felt like they were going to win because they hadn't really had a big run yet all game. So I knew they were saving it for the very end, thank goodness. But definitely in doubt there to start the second half.
I split my time listening between the TV and radio because oftentimes people will reach out to me and complain about something somebody said. So I kind of like to balance it. And to your point, both John Sunvold, who I really like as an analyst, the former Missouri Tiger, worked the game last night for the SEC Network. And then the guys in the studio at halftime said, I don't know if you saw or heard that, basically said the same thing. And I think, Anna, it was probably because of the fact that as poorly as Kentucky played, and Mike Pratt said the same thing, it's down only five at the half. Did you share that mode of thought at halftime that, hey, you know, it's still a two-possession game?
Oh, my gosh, completely. And there were certain times you just felt like they were getting beat so bad at all levels of the game, and you look up and they're only down 1 point. So I don't know whether that's good or bad, you know, to only be down one or five when you're playing that poorly. But, you know, Texas A&M, too, though, they played pretty bad down the stretch as well, and then they were still in the game. But I completely agree with that. This is like some of my favorite halftime analysis I've ever heard. I can't remember who it was. He was in the studio, SEC Network, with Patrick Young and Jari Noka, and he said, this reminds me of Ollie and Foreman,
yes,
where, you know, Foreman was throwing everything at him at the beginning, and Ollie goes, oh, is that all you got?
Yeah.
I love that because it was so true to this team because they came out and played horribly and still managed to eke out that win.
That was Damian Fishback, who played at Auburn and is a Kentucky native. I believe he's from Hopkinsville.
Really?
And, yeah, I really like it. And that was so funny. And what surprised me, Anna, was that Patrick Young, he's a bit younger. I can understand this. But I would have thought Dari Noka, as long as he's been in the business, would have heard that quote before. But anyhow, you're absolutely right. I cracked up when I heard that, and I think Fishback cracked himself up as well. But that, I thought that was a perfect analysis for that time. Not just, you know, the poor play, but the crowd, the noise, the whiteout. I mean, that's tangible, isn't it?
Oh, my gosh, yes. By far the craziest environment that they've played in. And some of these transfers, you have to think, you know, Kellen Grady or Davion Mintz, that may be the craziest road environment that they've played in. That was the record attendance for Texas A&M last night. So loud. So I think that's always a shock, I'm sure, but that's what you get when you do have these transfers with experience. Maybe it'll shock them a little bit at first, but they tend to adjust way better than if this were just a team of a whole bunch of new players. But that, what an environment for that. And we were laughing on BBN tonight because in Buzz Williams' pregame stuff, you know, this week, he was like, yeah, we're not going to do anything special. It's just like if Ole Miss came to town. Yeah, right. They stitched, like, beat the heck out of Kentucky on their uniforms. I was like, Buzz, you are lying. But it's okay because Cats went in there and got the dub.
Yeah. Interesting, too, that, first of all, Sevier Wheeler really struggled. Calipari tried to take some of the blame. But as I said earlier, Sevier just, I mean, there were basketball 101 mistakes, you know, getting trapped and pinned against the sideline by a double team. But his teammates didn't help him that much. But here he's a guy who grew up in Houston, born in New York, but grew up in Houston. Vinny Hardy just tweeted at me. He reminds that Collins himself is from Atlanta, Texas.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe that's why he got in a little early. That had to be, I think, difficult at first for those guys, knowing that friends and family are there.
Oh, for sure. And Sevier said his whole family, all of his siblings were there, friends, everybody. And then I know when he visited Texas A&M when he was at UGA, he had about 8 turnovers in that game as well. So, you know, credit to him because somehow he did lead all Kentucky scorers. And he had a few little runs there in the first half that kept Kentucky in it. He was able to find the basket, but no, you're right. That trap, man, I'm going to have nightmares about that. It got tight, too, down up to the end.
Yeah. And by the way, alert listener Clay just texted me and reminds that Fishback actually from Bowling Green played at Greenwood High School. So anyhow, yeah, he's I think he's a really fun guy to have on the anchor desk or analyzing, but he has always had an enormous amount of respect for Kentucky growing up here. But Patrick Young, who at times was a Wildcat killer when he was with Florida, did as well. But I think it's really interesting, Anna, when folks like that watch a game, and I think what we see are the warts. You know, oh my gosh, they're doing, oh, that's terrible because we see so many games. But guys who played against Kentucky and look at it, obviously, a little more objectively, they see the bigger picture. And so that said, I think the bigger picture for this team is, as you pointed out, no matter what Texas A&M threw at them, they come out with a win, which has got to be huge, heading down to what's going to be probably their toughest road game of the year, don't you think?
Oh, my gosh, yes. And I'm already sick of Auburn fans on Twitter. Sorry, Auburn fans, don't come at me. But, oh, my, I don't get it. They're doing all these memes. I need to know the origin story of this. They're being crazy. But I totally agree. And I think what you can tell, whether it's age, experience, or just will to win, but this team has really learned, I feel like, from the LSU loss. I believe that was the game that Kellen Grady was super cold in that first half. 0-for-6 or something, and they missed about 10 free throws. And so for him to struggle again in this first half, but they kept it between the buoys there. It didn't get out of hand. But I completely agree with you. Patrick Young has been awesome this season as an in-studio analyst. I really love hearing everything he says. And I think it's funny, too, because Dari Nokaw, at one point, he was like, yeah, were you guys worried? I kind of always knew they were going to win. And at Kentucky fans, I feel like I know I was. I was just looking at him like, Dari, what? No. I was emotional. I was up and down. But I guess when your emotions are out of it and you can watch, you probably don't feel the same way. But I think they did a great job. That was just a good game.
Yeah.
It was a fun game. It was it made me anxious, but it was fun.
Basketball purists would say it's an ugly game, and they'd be right. But,
yeah,
you know, if you have a rooting interest or if you just like SEC basketball, it was fascinating, to be sure.
It felt like March, for
sure. It really did. It really did. Mm-hmm. Except for the crowd, of course, although Kentucky crowds in March, anywhere you go, are similar. Anna Terullo is our guest. We'll come back and talk more basketball and a little football when we return. Served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington, this is the Leach Report.
This is the Leach Report on Talk Radio 1080. You can interact with the show via Twitter at Leach Report. Now, here's Tom.
Dick Aberlin for the voice of the Wildcats here on the Leach Report. We're talking with Anna Terullo of the UK TV network. You see her on BBN tonight. And, of course, she was glued to the tube last night. And I'm sure you had your radio on at some point listening to the game last night. And I've mentioned before that, Mike Pratt was saying a lot of the same things that were on TV, that Kentucky was making some real fundamental mistakes about the way the Wildcats were running their offense, were allowing themselves to be trapped. And it seemed like they had never seen that kind of trapping defense. That's one of the first things you mentioned when you came on with us this morning. But after that game was over, I'm thinking, well, you know, Auburn's going to be better and is better. But what a learning experience. And to come away from an atmosphere like that, it's going to be the same thing at Auburn. But to survive a game like that where you've got a pretty good athletic team in A&M playing that kind of run and jump, how do you think that's going to benefit them going into Auburn? It can only help, right?
Oh, my gosh, yes. And I think Jacob Toppin said it best after the game. I'm paraphrasing, of course, but he said something like, you know, a close win like that teaches you so much more about than if it were a blowout. 100%, they know that they're going to stick together in close games, and I think it showed us a lot. It showed them, more importantly, people who they can depend on to bring that hustle and who will be a leader in those times when you're down and nothing's working for you and you can barely get the ball past half court.
Yeah.
I saw Oscar had a lot of great vocal leadership. But Jacob Toppin and Davion Mintz, my Lord, especially what Mintz has shown us these past couple days. You don't get more dependable than Davion now. I mean, I wanted the ball in his hands. I know Ty struggled. I know Savir struggled. But I felt calm, cool, collected when Davion had the ball in his hands. And then Jacob Toppin, what? Where did that come from? From the first whistleblow. He was hustling. He dove over the bench for a loose ball. Mm-hmm. I think Lance Ware had a great putback or something, too. So I love, I don't know whether it's the new hair. Everybody's rocking this new hair. I'm loving it. I don't know whether it's that we're all on the same page here. But Jacob Toppin, we have talked about him since, you know, right before the season started. I know we asked, it could have been Goose Givens. Possibly it was Mike Pratt. But we asked a lot of people, you know, typically every year under Cal, there's a player who has, like, a light bulb moment. Who do you think it's going to be this year? And I believe it was Goose, he said, Jacob Toppin, because he's the most athletic guy on the floor. I mean, he's incredible what he can do. And I think, you know, Cal talked about him just maturing. What I saw the difference in him this game was he wanted to win. That's what it was. He wasn't being passive just in the game through his part. He wanted to win so bad. And I think that is another thing that Oscar brings to the table. I think that's rubbed off on a lot of people. Just every minute of every game, every practice, you want to win.
Yeah.
And I think that's a mindset that this group has that pulled them through. And, you know, in some seasons you say, oh, well, the losses, they show you things. I don't always think that's true. I think sometimes the loss just sucks, whatever. But I do think these close losses, you know, Notre Dame and LSU, whew, they do not want to feel like that again. This team doesn't. And they're so competitive that I think I wonder if they would have won this game if they didn't have those close losses.
Well, I still think back to the quote of the year was Kellen Grady when he talked about how he said, we're going to look back on that Notre Dame loss with gratitude because of what they took away from that. I think that's a really – of course, he's a veteran. They call him Grandpa.
I know. That's he's
the
like
veteran.
A professor.
Yeah, that's a great point. That he talks like one, to be sure.
He really does.
You know, but Toppin, 9.6 boards, 2 assists, a steal, and a block. Needs to work on that interior defense a little bit, but he is instant energy. There's no question about that. One of the problems I have of late with Tshiebwe, this is also new to him because, of course, he had, you know, a solid time spent at West Virginia, but was never really the focal point that he is now, obviously. So he's drawn all kinds of attention on both ends of the floor. And, you know, you watch him turn to the official and put his hands up like, hey, what the heck, you know. And I'm thinking, just get down the floor. I think you see the frustration in him, and I think it may be affecting his approach to the game a little bit. Do you agree?
Oh, my gosh, completely. I made a joke on Twitter last night. I was like, all right, so that was just aggravated assault on Oscar, and we're just not going to say anything about the referees. What? I mean, there was bodies on him, 3 bodies on him, each end of the floor. And it affected Kentucky rebounding because, you know, he can't get near the board, and he's the only one crashing the board. So I like Davion Mintz actually stepped up. He had 8 rebounds. He was second behind Oscar's 14.
Yeah.
But what I did like to see was Jacob Toppin. There was one play towards the end of the game where Oscar, I believe he got like an over-the-back foul. And Jacob, he knew that he had missed his assignment either defensively or trying to crash the board. And I think that was actually a really good sign that he wasn't looking around confused. How did that happen? He knew where the hiccup was. And I'm hoping they get that straightened out moving forward. They're starting to identify maybe how more they can help. Tshiebwe, and that's exactly what we need out of Toppin. That's why I think also his performance was so it gave me a lot of confidence in this team because that's exactly what they've been missing is somebody else with the height and athleticism down low to kind of take, bear some of the brunt down there.
A couple minutes left with Anna Tarullo of the UK TV network. Let me shift you over to football UK with 13 mid-year enrollees coming in 13, Anna. I remember the first time they were able to do this, I think they brought in 6, and we all marveled at, you know, the advantage that they would have, et cetera. But not only are there 13 of these guys, but some of them are the higher profile recruit. You know, they love them all, I know. But what do you think that says and does for Kentucky football to be able to bring in so many, you know, including Dane Key and Keontae Goodwin, guys like that?
Oh, my God, I am so excited. I think it says they are ready to get to work. It just shows, you know, I think it's great. You know, Will Levis, he came after spring ball. He missed that. And I think it showed by you know, he did a stellar job from the beginning, but he really got comfortable with that offense towards the end of the season. And I think it's because he missed that portion of the season, spring ball, and getting comfortable with Liam Cohen's offense. Now with a wideout that you desperately need, Dane Key, Kayvon Robinson, the Virginia Tech wide receiver transfer, yeah, to have them come in the spring and be able to just get themselves familiar with the offense, I think will be huge. And then, gosh, Keontae Goodwin, I'm so excited to have him on campus ready to work. Even what he could do to his frame, his body in that time, I think will be incredible. But the other thing with the transfer portal, you know, you can get people, as I said with Will Levis, at all times of the year, Dare Rosenthal. You got him right before the start of the season. So you're going to have those guys who are playing catch-up. So if you can get your core guys in there early, oh, my gosh, I feel like that absolves a world of problems, really, just to have guys confident in the flow of things, especially for freshmen, just to get adjusted to classes, lifting, schedules.
Yeah.
So that's awesome. And I'm most excited about just Will Levis having the spring to get comfortable with everyone.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. And for him to literally have to hit the ground running as he did last year was impressive. And by the way, two of the 13 include offensive linemen, including, as I said, yeah, Grant Bingham. I think the Big Blue Wall is going to need a bit of a rebuild this year, obviously, but nobody over there seems too concerned. I think they're taking the brave approach, but it's good to get these young guys on campus and working right away, of course, and gives us a chance to meet them as well. One of the people they will meet is Anna Tarullo of the UK TV Network. Thank you so much for getting up early. I know you were up late, but it's always fun talking to you.
Of course. Thank you so much, Dick.
Have a good one. That is Anna Tarullo. And when we come back, we'll wrap up this edition of the Leach Report, brought to you by Wild Eggs of Lexington.
Find out more about the voice of the Cats and get great coverage of the Big Blue at TomLeachKY.com.
Thanks again to our guest today, Sean Vinsel from HoopsInsight.com. Follow him on Twitter at that same address, HoopsInsight. And Anna Tarullo, of course, of BBN Tonight, the UK TV network. How to have that much energy that early in the morning, I guess that's something to be envied. But I can tell you that she's always like that. So we do, especially after a UK win, we do appreciate her for that. A reminder, it's Kentucky-Auburn, as though you needed reminding. This coming Saturday, 1 o'clock tip-off on CBS, and here in Lexington on WKYT, in Louisville on WLKY. UK Radio Network coverage begins at 11:30 on Saturday morning. And you know it's going to be another crazy atmosphere down on the plains. Bruce Pearl and his Tigers laying in wait for those Kentucky Wildcats. Tonight, UK women's basketball, 7 o'clock tip. Wildcats take on the Florida Gators in the Coliseum. For Shannon the Dude, Dick Gabriel, that's it. So long from the Leach Report.
Thanks for listening to The Leach Report. Make sure you check out the podcast page at TomLeachKY.com whenever you miss a show.